Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Intersection. My name is Mark Riley, and thank you so much for listening. I want to start out talking about Black Lives Matter. Some of you may know, and certainly those of you who listen to this podcast on a regular basis know, I have a somewhat problematic relationship with social media. Well, I received a post recently on Facebook, and I wanted to read it verbatim so you understand what I'm about to reference. This is a direct quote. The Black Lives Matter organization is a lesbian group whose goal is to destroy the father figure in families and replace him with homosexuality. Go to their website, read what we believe, and see for yourself. Unquote. Now, when I first saw this, I thought it was a joke. I thought somebody was playing around. They're not, as it turns out. I wonder, and the first thing that crossed my mind when I saw this was, I'm Vladimir Putin and I approve this message. And don't think that that's far-fetched in any way, shape, or form. Second thing I thought was, what unadulterated, unmitigated garbage. What followed this particular quote were more than 140 comments. Some taking serious issue with this, but many, too many, I have to say, agreeing with it. And what does Black Lives Matter say in that What We Believe section? Little more than they're inclusive of LGBTQ folks and are comfortable with people from those communities being in leadership positions in the organization. I want to be very clear about this. They say that they are inclusive of LGBTQ black folks and are comfortable with people from those communities being in leadership positions. Nowhere does it say that they want to replace black men or anything like that. Nothing about destroying anything or anyone. So why the attacks, including a separate one under the banner of Black Lives Matter, which quotes a woman who is completely and utterly vulgar and obscene? I believe this is happening now for several reasons. One, Black Lives Matter is in fact having an impact, which truly scares some people, even people in the black community. And by the way, it could be Putin, it could be Trump, it could be the Russians, it could be the American government that is furthering this kind of utter nonsense. However, when these kinds of things happen, and I'm going back now many years, and I'll get to that in a minute, but when this happens, efforts, and when I say happen, I'm talking about Black Lives Matter having an impact, efforts are usually made to discredit or disable the engine of change, in this case being BLM. Let me be clear. When it comes to black people, it doesn't matter if you espouse nonviolence, self-defense, Marxism, communism, or whatever. If you're having an impact, they come for you. Whether it's Black Lives Matter or run by lesbians or Kanye West with his foolishness about Harriet Tubman, it has one purpose, diversion. So what if Black Lives Matter is run by lesbians, which may or may not be true? I don't know, and I don't care. Gays and lesbians, quiet as is kept, have always been involved in the struggle for freedom on behalf of black people. And I'm talking about both black gays and black lesbians. Most have had to remain closeted, in some cases, for their own safety. If black struggle is not inclusive, it is not struggle at all. I fortunately lived long enough to realize this. I also know that efforts to divide us take many forms, including those from governments, again, foreign and domestic. Seems to me some people have forgotten about COINTELPRO, the 60s and 70s efforts to sow disunity and distrust among black organizations at that time. Those who don't know that history should not despair. Your lack of knowledge is not your fault, it's my fault. Black folks of my generation forgot to pass on the legacy and the nobility of struggle to our kids and grandkids. Not doing so robs young people of one all-important thing, context. In its proper context, the attempts to discredit Black Lives Matter would be seen for what it is, just another brick in the wall. Now, please let's be clear. What I'm saying does not imply that I agree with everything that Black Lives Matter says or does. It's not really about that. Black folks can differ on all manner of tactics, of strategy, and methodology. But to say an organization has no credibility because they are open to people from the LGBTQ community and transgendered people, assuming positions of leadership, misses the point entirely. I'll tell you what, I, for one, cannot get behind any level of homophobia, especially among my own people. And again, we've seen this kind of thing before. You know, not too long ago, I was reading a piece about the life of the late Herman Ferguson. Many of you may not know who he is, but I find it interesting because when there are folks who talk about, you know, Black folks ought to form gun clubs and we ought to be prepared to defend ourselves and our communities. If that means taking up firearms, so be it. Well, Herman Ferguson believed that a half century ago and actually started a gun club for self-defense in the Black community, in his case, in the Black community of Queens. For his trouble, he was arrested, tried, convicted, and then left the country and lived in Guyana for an extended period of time. But one of the things that really struck me in reading about Herman Ferguson was the extent to which the police in New York City and the feds infiltrated organizations that he was part of. And by the way, the accounts I read named names. Talked about the people that were directly involved, talked about people who admitted infiltrating these organizations. Why do I say all this now? Because I have to wonder where these people are coming from. Now, the woman that did the Black Lives Matter nonsense, who spewed that garbage, was, in my mind, from the West Coast. Why do I say this? Because she made mention of immigration and then said, well, you see what Compton's become on account of immigration. Well, that's a West Coast thing. People on the East Coast have no clue what Compton has become due to immigration. That makes her a West Coast person. And maybe that doesn't matter one way or the other. I do say, however, that these kinds of scurrilous attacks based on sexuality, of all things, has to be called out. And, you know, I'm an old man. Nobody can do anything to me, so I'm going to call it out. It's nonsense. It's garbage. Now, to be fair, and so that people understand, there is more than one Black Lives Matter organization. There is an organization called the Black Lives Matter Foundation that had been soliciting contributions from various and sundry individuals, organizations, because that's another thing that they accused BLM of being run by white people, funded by white people, etc. The Black Lives Matter Foundation did solicit and did in fact get funding from some white individuals and organizations. That's true. The Black Lives Matter Foundation, as a matter of fact, it's also true that the New York State Attorney General, Letitia James, who happens to be a Black woman I know, banned them from raising funds in New York. This is the foundation. This is not the movement. This is the foundation. And there are all manner of people running around saying they speak for Black Lives Matter. They're part of Black Lives Matter. They're part of the leadership of Black Lives Matter. Be skeptical when you hear these things. Be especially skeptical about why folks would slander an organization that has had such a big impact and has done so much. I can't get behind homophobia. I'm saying this again. I can't get behind homophobia especially for my own people. That doesn't make me less of a man. That does not make me any less of a father. What about you? Up next, goon squads in Portland, soon to come to a city near you. This is The Intersection.
Good and bad, big, small, in and out, none at all. If it feels good, it's all right. If it feels good, it's all right. Tell me when you feel it. Front and back, hot and cold, sweet and sour, young and old.
Welcome back to The Intersection. Join the conversation on my Facebook page at Mark Riley Media. Imagine for a moment you're walking down the street and you come across a protest. Doesn't really matter what the protest is about, you just keep walking. Suddenly, a van pulls up next to you. Some men wearing camouflage jump out, grab you, and put you in the van. Sounds like a scene from a nightmarish film? It isn't. It's Portland, Oregon in 2020. The men in camouflage are federal agents, although they're not wearing identification and in many cases refuse to tell you who they are. The governor of Oregon, Kate Brown, says this is a blatant abuse of power. The mayor of Portland, Ted Wheeler, says it is an attack on our democracy. Now, Portland, for those of you who don't know, was a scene of a number of ongoing protests. Some violent, some not so violent. But in this case, the Trump administration has used some of the protests that perhaps did turn violent as a rationale to send people from different federal agencies into that city to so-called protect federal property and to prosecute crimes against federal property. This is what they say. Now, Kate Brown and Ted Wheeler, the governor of Oregon, the mayor of Portland, they're both correct. It's an abuse of power, and it's an attack on democracy. And of course, the person who's orchestrating all this is none other than our president. Worse still, he's not done yet. And I'm not saying this, he says this. He plans to deploy 150 Homeland Security agents to Chicago to help fight violence there. Trump has mentioned Philadelphia, New York, Detroit, and other cities, all with one thing in common. They're run by Democrats. This alone should frighten every American, regardless of where you live, regardless of your political party or affiliation. Think about this as a possible dress rehearsal for something equally, if not more, sinister. Is it a great leap to imagine the wholesale occupation of American cities by federal law enforcement? Maybe right around the first Tuesday in November. I know it sounds alarmist. I know you think, well, there's no way he could get away with doing something like this. I don't know. I do not know. This person, who has been elected by the American people, and the Electoral College, of course, has shown such instability, has shown such ability to act in such ruthless and, I believe, in many cases, unconstitutional manners. I don't put anything past the man anymore. He will lie, he will prevaricate, he will say just about anything. And you don't think Donald Trump would try to occupy certain cities run by Democrats around Election Day? Think again. His politicized threats are transparent attempts to rally his base, many of whom, by the way, have never even been to the cities that he pillories. Several mayors and governors are ready to take legal action against what he's trying to do. Take for Chicago, for example. There is no question that Chicago has a violence problem. Chicago has a problem with young people in many cases, but people generally owning guns and using them to murder people, to shoot otherwise innocent people, to shoot unarmed people in many cases. However, federal officials, federal agents, usually get involved at the request of the mayors of those cities. Last I checked, Mayor Lightfoot in Chicago has not asked Donald Trump to intervene to try and do something about the gun violence problem in Chicago. Now, to be fair, God, I hate to use that term because it's so overused, but to be fair, he does have the right to safeguard federal facilities and property and to investigate crimes against them. Yet in most cities, 90 to 99% of all property is not federal property. Make no mistake, this is misuse of federal power at its absolute lowest and most cynical. Now, to equate street violence in Chicago, or any other city for that matter, with a political ideology is nothing less than chicanery. Someone who actually cared about violence, as I said before, would work with these mayors, work with these governors. In other words, they'd have a plan. Donald Trump doesn't have a plan. He just thinks it's cute to send these people into cities to pick people up off the street, in some cases, not even to charge them with anything, but to pick these people up off the street as a show of force, as a show of federal force. And it's like, pick them up now, make up the charges later. And we've seen the excesses of certain law enforcement jurisdictions were doing that anyway. I'm talking about local, municipal law enforcement, the regular cops. The bottom line here is, this is an unwarranted expansion of federal power. And Trump really has no plan other than to say to people, this is what I'm doing. And his base applauds, largely because right now it doesn't pertain to them. It has nothing to do with them. They're not based in Chicago. They're not based in Philly. They're not based in Portland. But they applaud his showing up so-called weak mayors and governors who have let things go too far. This is according to Donald Trump. Now, he may at some point figure out, although it may take some time, that this is not the pathway to a second term, which is really what all of this is about. Yeah, he had a press conference the other day, a briefing on the coronavirus, but he really hasn't been paying much attention to that, except now he finally says it may get worse before it gets better. But he still says we're doing a great job. He still says that the reason why the numbers are going up is because they're doing more testing. He still continues to spew the same falsehoods. And the pretexts and the falsehoods for sending federal troops, federal agents, whether it's from Homeland Security, alcohol, tobacco, firearms, wherever it's from, into cities unidentified and snatching people off the street. People who may have done nothing more than walk down the street at the same time as a protest, whatever the protest may be about. And remember that Trump has defended other protesters. Trump has defended right-wing protesters. Trump has defended protesters in Charlottesville, Virginia, where a young lady lost her life. He didn't say anything about sending federal troops there. So take all this, please, with a grain of salt. Donald Trump having a plan about sending federal agents to cities? I don't think so. His plan is no plan. just like he has no plan for healthcare or for coronavirus. His plan, such as it is focusing on portraying Democrats, especially Joe Biden, who is not from Portland, not from Philly, not from Detroit. He's from Delaware, for God's sake. But he's trying to portray Joe Biden as weak and presiding over anarchist takeovers of cities and eventually the nation. Now, what he's doing may or may not be legal. That's up to the courts. From where I sit, it's un-American, no matter how you try and slice it. When we come back, calling out anti-Semitism, especially among those who ought to know better. Our last segment on this episode of The Intersection.
Join the conversation at Mark Riley Media on Facebook.
Welcome back to The Intersection. Got something on your mind? Message me on Facebook at Mark Riley Media. Now, I know some of my friends are going to disagree vehemently on this, but I have to say it. In 2013, just 7 years ago, there were 751 hate crimes against Jews. Last year, that number rocketed up to 2,107 hate crimes, almost three times as many. That should cause concern and outrage among all people. Yet recently, black athletes and entertainers have been littering social media with all manner of anti-Semitic tropes, lies, and stereotypes. Nick Cannon, Ice Cube, DeSean Jackson, Steven Jackson, and even Chelsea Handler, who is herself Jewish, have all said or repeated hateful things about Jewish people. Now, along comes Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Hall of Fame basketballer and a Muslim, to call out not just anti-Semitic speech, but silence in the face of anti-Semitic speech within the black community. When he says accurately that these folks share, quoting here, the same scapegoat logic as all oppressive groups from Nazis to the KKK. All our troubles are because of bad apple groups that worship wrong, have the wrong complexion, come from the wrong country, are the wrong gender, or love the wrong gender, end quote. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is absolutely right. Now, some of the people he called out have apologized for their hurtful words, including Cannon, both Jacksons, and Handler. Others have stood firm in their ignorance, calling it their truth. That, ladies and gentlemen, is sad. If their truth is told at the expense of others, we are all diminished. Now, let me be very clear, and this is an opinion of mine, and mine alone, I guess. You can be and criticize policies of the state of Israel without being an anti-Semite. When it comes to settlements and a lot of other things that the Israeli government does, I disagree. And I think I ought to be free to disagree with those policies without being painted an anti-Semite. But these folks that I just mentioned are not talking about Israeli government policy. They're talking about long discredited crap about the Rothschilds and about Jews controlling the banks and Jews controlling the media. When I was on the radio, I used to have to deal with this almost on a daily basis. And then when you start talking about who really does control the banking system in America and the fact that they are not, in fact, Jewish, what you get is silence in some cases, crickets, or doubling down Nah, no, that's not true. I know, it's a known fact. If I had a dollar for every time while I was on the radio, somebody said it's a known fact, I'd be very rich today. The fact of the matter is, some of these things go back centuries about Jews. Some of these stereotypes about Jews were used by the Nazis to slaughter Jewish people. That should anger and upset people, regardless of race. But it should upset black people as well. Just like homophobia should upset black people. This is just my opinion. Anti-Semitism, I believe, should upset black people. Now, I know that during one of the conversations that Nick Cannon had on his podcast with Professor Griff, formerly of Public Enemy, they went into the whole thing about who are Semitic people. Again, something I've heard and argued about with people ad infinitum. Well, blacks can't be anti-Semitic because we are the original Semites. Therefore, we cannot engage in anti-Semitic behavior. Hey, the bottom line is, hate is hate. And when you start talking about a group of people, again, not their government, but their religion, that's a problem. It's problematic. That doesn't mean you have to agree with every Jewish person you meet on every issue. Hardly. And keep in mind, too, that people who have no interest in the black community will use these kinds of words, these tropes, this anti-Semitism on the part of black people to convince Jews that they ought to be with them, with the Donald Trumps of the world. And by the way, not for nothing, Donald Trump's niece, Mary Trump, in writing that book she wrote recently, said that anti-Semitic remarks were part and parcel of family dialogue among the Trumps. Family dialogue. So let's be clear that failure to speak out against anti-Semitism does the black community no good. And when people within the community start saying this and saying these kinds of things, it is incumbent upon those who know better to say something. That's why I salute Kareem on this. I stand with Kareem on this. Anti-Semitism has no place in black dialogue, or in fact, any dialogue. Some people will look at the times that we're living in and say, Kareem shouldn't say anything about this sort of thing. Or it's hurtful to black people for Kareem to call this out at a crucial time as we fight oppressive police tactics and racism in the body politic. I believe that calling out anti-Semitism is more necessary than ever at this crucial time in our history. Our ignorance of the oppression of others is not an excuse to participate in anti-Semitism or most other kinds of isms to make ourselves feel better about ourselves. The plain fact of the matter is, we ought to be naturally feeling good about ourselves. Is that so difficult to understand? Is it somehow an abstract concept to say that you do not enhance yourself at the expense of others? I mean, there's plenty of history that would say to people, we can't afford to do this because people have been marginalized forever, especially in America, around this very same intolerance and oppression. And I'm not saying that blacks oppress Jews. Don't get me wrong. But I am saying that anti-Semitism among blacks does us no good as a community. Feeling good about ourselves ought to be a natural, organic thing. Thank you so much for listening. The executive producer of The Intersection is Ms. Kim Jack Riley. Till we meet again, please stay well.